Canucks Central Friday. It's Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah here in the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet? What are you waiting for? Visit kintec.net. This hour of Canucks Central brought to you by your Lower Mainland Boston Pizza. Every Vancouver hockey game gets $5 pints of Molson Canadian or Coors Light, plus weekly prize giveaways all season long at your local Lower Mainland Boston Pizza. You want to be a part of the program here on Friday the 13th? You can. 650-650 on the Dunbar Lumber text message inbox. If you are listening live, leave a question, a comment, a comment, if you will, to the Dunbar Lumber text message inbox.
You just can't let it go, can you?
I can't. Once I heard you say it, almost say it on the post game show the other night.
You're so thirsty for it that it's like you thought about it. I could tell you thought about it.
It was in your brain.
That cackle, I did not like it.
I know. Friday
you
the 13th
is way too much.
I'm Friday the 13th. That's not a superstitious guy. Making sure to make it a big part of the show today.
Friday the 13th.
Yeah, it is. Haven't you noticed a lot of bad luck today?
Personally,
yeah.
No.
Okay.
Have you? I mean,
see, Zach is nodding his head. He misread
the schedule and was an hour late today.
Oh man.
And I'm going to blame that on Friday.
Classic.
Tough. I guess if you're a Whitecaps fan, that's tough.
Yeah.
Today, that would be bad luck.
Yeah, that would be bad news for Whitecaps fans today. Arash, you a Friday the 13th guy? No.
No. Mm. I'm sorry, guys.
No, good.
What is it with you guys? I don't get it. You know,
just don't care.
You don't care? You're not superstitious?
Not superstitious.
Not even a little stitious?
Not scared.
Okay.
Like I said, I don't like living my life in fear.
Mm. Fair enough. It's like Friday the 13th, Mercury in retrograde. That's when the bad things happen.
Mercury in retrograde.
I don't even know what that is, but my wife does.
Yeah.
So when things are going bad, it's because Mercury's in retrograde.
Well, and then you start talking about, it's like, well, your body's composed of water. And you know what happens with the tide? They move to your body, and it's like...
Is this like iron? What? Okay, let's get to the open.
Welcome to the open.
Oh! That's your home! Are you too good for your home? Answer me!
The Open on Canucks Central, our take on the latest with your Vancouver Canucks. And the Canucks got a big win over the defending Stanley Cup champs last night. JT Miller returned to the lineup, and they smash the Panthers. 4-0 is the final score. Third shutout of the year for Kevin Blankenen, and the vibes were as good as they could possibly be last night at the rink for how the Vancouver Canucks played.
Yeah, it was fun to see the building buzzing again,
yeah.
Right? And some optimism and the way the Canucks played and were able to blank the Florida Panthers. It just created a good vibe and a good feeling in the building. And, I just think it's one of those also kind of narrative-crushing games, mm-hmm. which I'm always a big fan of seeing.
Narrative-crushing games. Those are the best ones. Sat doesn't like the narratives. You know, like there was a lot that was good last night. You know, they got some bounces, but you know, as we like to say on the show, you earn your bounces a lot of the times. And the Canucks did. You know, they get the early bounce off the Soucy goal. They get a good tip that allows Soucy to beat Bobrovsky. The great bounce. Defying physics. It felt like the spit in Seinfeld. You know, the way the puck bounced off the back of the net right back to Brock Besser, so that he could easily score on Sergei Bobrovsky. It defied all logic and physics. I don't know what happened on that puck.
Metaphorically, it was the bounce that changed the your luck for this season.
Yes.
Right? Yeah. It's like this is now the sign of things to come.
the bounces are now going your way for the Vancouver Canucks.
But honestly, like the thing I like the most about the game is the nerdiest thing is just how they defended and played through the neutral zone and how they supported each other,
mm-hmm.
With their five-man game, whether it was when they had the puck or when they didn't have the puck. How often did you see, even when Florida was able to get through the neutral zone with speed, somebody closed them down quickly? They were being contested over the ice. And one of the hallmarks of the team last year was how much they were contesting plays
mm-hmm.
everywhere in the ice. And they really showed that in the first game of the year against the Edmonton Oilers when they beat them big on the scoreboard. But there wasn't an inch of ice that they weren't fighting for. And they weren't making difficult for the opposition to fight through and to be able to get. And that's exactly what that the Panthers had to deal with. It wasn't perfect from a chance generation standpoint, but it was also score effects. When you score the goals you do and take the lead the way you do, you control the game differently. But I just loved how they contested everything all over the ice, and that to me is something that really reminded me of last year's team.
It helped to get Forbert back as well. You know, I know a lot of people, I don't know, I guess he's been underrated by the market. Not that I'm saying a guy that got a $1.5 million contract in free agency this summer is a world beater or anything, but like, he is a legit NHL defenseman with defensive upside. Now, like, yeah, he mishandled the puck a couple of times. He's rusty, hasn't been in the lineup for a while. But the way he defended the blue line, some of the plays he made to help the breakout, like just quick passes off of rims to, like, chip it into the middle of the ice and have the centerman skate onto it and start the breakout. Like, there was just a lot of little things that Derek Forbert did well, and it certainly helped the Canucks in, you know, like we talked about in pregame, how are you going to get more out of the minutes without Quinn Hughes on the ice? And, you know, Derek Forbert came into the lineup and helped that.
Yeah, and, you know, the coaches trust him, right? Now, obviously, having the lead and getting out to a 3-4 year, 3-4 goal lead, it allows you to really limit Quinn Hughes' minutes as well, right? Yep. And I think that was a big part of allowing him to only play 22 minutes on the night. But there's clear trust in Derek Forbert. There's no way Quinn only plays 22 minutes with a 3-goal lead for most of that, for most of the third period, if they had Desharnais and Brännström playing, yeah, right? They wouldn't get about 19 and change the way, yeah, Forbert did. So regardless of having the lead, having Forbert there allowed them to not utilize Quinn as much and allowed them to kind of roll through those 3D pairs. And, you know, I see Mike and Surrey and people texting in and talking about, you know, well, analytics wise, and I agree, like, it wasn't the perfect game and what the Canucks gave up. But I would also challenge that when you watch that game and look at the chances the Canucks gave up, how hard they made life for the Florida Panthers. They were great to me defensively. They didn't generate enough, but I would also chalk a lot of that up to score effects because they had the lead. At the same time, the team isn't perfect yet. To me, it was a step in the right direction. They have to build on this, right? Like, do you build on it going into the game against the Bruins? Can the offense evolve and get more dangerous, which we would hope it can with JT Miller back in the lineup? Because you could see how the four lines can work again with JT back.
Well, score effects play a factor here, right? Well, and also, I don't expect you to win every metric against the defending Stanley Cup champs either. So there's that. But, you know, you get an early lead, you build on that early lead, you score again early in the second to make it a 3-0 lead. Now you can certainly play a smart, safe hockey game the rest of the way against a very dangerous Florida team, and the Canucks did that. And they got the saves that they needed whenever there was a little breakdown. And you think about the Barkov chance at the end of the second period, those kinds of things. But it was very similar to last year, where the Canucks built early leads and then were able to calmly play with that lead through the rest of the game and get into their defensive structure and identity.
Yeah, and that's why, you know, I'm not going to say, hey, to me, the Jans generation was a problem because of how they scored and had the lead. But that's going to be the evolution, right? Like, can the team start doing the things the coach is trying to get them to do and become as the season goes on? Because it's not just about, can you beat last year's team? It's about being better than last year's team.
Yeah.
Ultimately, you're not trying to lose in the second round.
No, you're not trying to lose in game 7 to the Edmonton Oilers again. No.
Yeah, right. You're trying to be better. So I think that is the goal ultimately. And we have to start evaluating the team based on that. Now, as we're getting healthier, we're going to get a clearer picture of what this team is capable of doing.
And the biggest part of last night's game, you heard the chants throughout Rogers Arena. He ends up with, what, a pair of assists, JT Miller coming back into the lineup and doing all the things you expect and have come to love about JT Miller. I mean, he makes that much of a difference, his own individual talent, but, you know, you see the fourth line get a couple of goals as well, because now Teddy Bluger's running that fourth line. They get better matchups. He gets matchups he can win, and so on and so forth. It just slots everybody else into matchups that they can absolutely win. So did Miller make that much of a difference? I mean, individually, I know that there's a lot more levels that JT Miller can still get to, even though he was good last night. But I think it just made a difference for the entire team to have their guy back.
Yeah, it's settled. You're right. Slotting even having Heinen and Bluger on the fourth line and allowed Sasson, who honestly played his best game last night as a Canuck, and it was a real positive step
for him.
Saw
the speed, man. He made Kulikov look like he was skating in cement.
Yeah, and he played more direct. Yeah. I mean, we talked about him heading into the game that he's not, I wouldn't say he's played soft, but he's been kind of a little bit tentative and around things, not in things. He got right into it. And I loved on the first goal to Soucy how instead of going to the outside, because Heinen was already kind of shading inside, he decided to cut in, and that's what allowed that chance to develop the way it did. A lot of confidence. I loved what he did. But you're right. Having JT allowed them to have Heinen and Blueger. Yeah. And now Blueger, the way he goes and carries guys as well, with the tenacity he plays, that made a difference. And even if, though JT obviously is not still the same player yet, his first game back, we'll see how it, you know, goes, he made an immediate impact because he was so attentive. He was so aware with his defensive play and positional play. He was great through the neutral zone. You saw it in the first shift as well, like how he ends up, you know, knocking a puck loose in the neutral zone. He's contesting plays in the neutral zone. He was forechecking well, and also in his own zone, how often do you see him? Something you talk about a lot. He's really good at defending the front of his net. He gets into that spot a lot, and he was in that area. And is it a coincidence with JT back doing that, the Canucks were a lot stronger in the guts of the ice all the way through the neutral zone and net to net?
And I only had to play 14-17 last night. Rick Tocchet really spread out the minutes amongst his group for last night's game. I think it was Teddy Blueger and Connor Garland who ended up leading all forwards, and Danton Heinen even had among the highest minutes played last night for Vancouver, so a good showing from him. And then we get to this morning, and Elliot Friedman is giving his take on what's happened with the Vancouver Canucks, and JT is the emotional leader, but he had a lot to say about JT's absence and how things are going to develop from here now with him back into the lineup and into the locker room.
Well, we know that JT was away to deal with whatever he had to deal with, right?
Mm-hmm.
We know the general manager, Patrick Alvin, when he spoke to Dan Murphy on the panel on the intermission a few weeks back after releasing the statement, talked about how proud he was of JT and how when JT comes back, he's going to be a better husband, you know, better father, all these sort of things, and also a better teammate. So obviously, whatever JT was dealing with, it required him to step away from the team. Because whatever he was dealing with was obviously impacting him at work to some degree, whether it was mentally, emotional, whatever it was, right? That's just a fact. Like, we know this. We don't know the nature of what he was dealing with. We don't need to know the nature of what he was dealing with. That's not what we're trying to find out. But clearly, there was something there going on. So is it a surprise that at some point at the end of the year, you sit down and talk about, okay, so where are things at?
Mm-hmm.
Whatever you're dealing with, how are you? How are things? What do you look to the future towards? So I don't think that should be a big surprise. And I think that's pretty normal in a situation like this. As far as the dynamics, we've talked about Pettersson and JT in the past. You don't have to be best friends.
Yeah.
You have to be able to coexist.
Yes.
Does that mean it can work long term? We don't know. But right now, they're not trying to trade JT.
No.
They're trying to make it work. And hopefully, with what he's gone through, where he's at, they can move forward. But I don't think it's unnatural to reassess in the offseason when a player's gone through what JT's gone through.
When, if you think back to the Nashville game, which was the game prior to JT taking his leave, and we know he got benched at the end of that third period, even with the Canucks trailing and Rick Tocchet with the quote saying, "I went with the guys that I felt could help us win the game." To me, looking back on it now in hindsight, obviously provides a little bit of extra detail, but I look at it and I say, well, Rick Tocchet just didn't feel JT was in a space that he could help the team in that moment for whatever reason, whatever he was seeing, he felt that, and JT wasn't playing well. Like, if you're being honest and objective about the way the results he was having on the ice prior to his personal leave, yeah, there were some goals. I think a couple of them were empty netters. You know, he was still doing his thing, collecting points. JT has always said it throughout his career, you know, I'm not worried about points. I know I can get points, but I know when I'm at my best, I'm playing well at both ends of the rink. And those kinds of things just weren't there for JT before he left the lineup. So, you know, when you look back at that perspective, it's easy to see how, yes, whatever is going on with JT was affecting his play on the ice and connect the two.
Well, anytime you take time away, it's because whatever you're dealing with is making it hard for you to do the things you normally do.
Yeah.
Again, like, this is I don't think this is a surprise. Like, we're not...
Shouldn't be.
We're not talking about something that, you know...
It's life.
Yeah, I mean, it's just the fact of the situation, right? But he's back. He looks pretty good on the ice the first game, right? Which is the big positive. But also, I think... I know there's been a lot of questions, too, about, like, you know, what's going on? What are the reasons? Why? We don't know the reasons. Again, we don't need to know specific reasons about somebody's private life and what's going on, right? Mm-hmm. But what we do know is that, at least from sources I've spoken to, and I don't think anybody's reported otherwise, that whether you talk to people from the organization side or would know the player side more, that it was the player who asked for the time. It wasn't the team saying, hey, go take a timeout.
Right.
So, I mean... I don't know the reason. Again, we don't need to know the reasons, but like that's the dynamic.
Yeah.
Now, what led to what? We don't know. But at the end of the day, again, when a player's coming back from a situation like that, I don't think it's unnatural to see how things go and also see what happens at the end of the season. And we know, again, the relationship with him and Pettersson hasn't always been perfect. And at some point, you get to a stage where does this work or not work? I know Elliot mentioned some have to bend. He has to bend. They have to bend. There is an understanding of, hey, if you guys can't always get along, you have to be able to still coexist and not make it awkward.
Yeah.
You know, and maybe Elliot wasn't talking about Pettersson or him specifically.
Oh,
but
and you had the very public dust up that happened earlier this year, which isn't, I mean, no matter how you slice it, how real or not real it was, optically, it does not look good given the history of their relationship. So... when you think about that, you think about where we've gone and where we are today, all of it adds up to this is a story that's still developing in some way, shape, or form. But at the bottom line of it all, like on Pettersson and Miller, both ways, suck it up. You guys want to win hockey games? Do you want to have a potential to win a Stanley Cup? Because you're on a pretty good hockey team. You've got a lot of potential to do some really interesting things as we saw last year, and you can build on that. Whatever it is between you two, figure it out and make it work. Not everybody's going to love every single one of their colleagues. That's always been my thought on this, and it's always going to be that way. Figure it out and make sure that it just doesn't somehow spill out onto the ice and you guys can still have success that way.
Yeah, and I think the other thing about it too, and every time, you know, I've asked about it too, about, hey, you know, how are things with, say, Pettersson and JT, right? And from people that don't necessarily, you know, aren't afraid of telling me the truth, so to speak, right? And it gets downplayed a lot. It's like, yeah, I mean, they're not best friends, but it's not as bad as people make it out to be. Now, obviously, it's a situation that has needed massaging over time. Has there been some massaging this year as well over it? You know, whatever. I mean, possibly. It's one of those things that you have to manage, right? And I think when you have to manage big personalities, sometimes that can be tiresome on people, right? And that's where you get to the point of like grow up and figure it out. But I think as far as where we're at with JT right now, like he hasn't asked for a trade. Jim Rutherford has come out and said they're not trading him.
Mm-hmm.
So right now, I'm not really concerned about JT's future. Let's all see how the season unfolds, and we'll see what happens this offseason.
Jim Rutherford's going to speak tomorrow. He'll be on After Hours with Scott Oak after the Canucks play the Boston Bruins. So this is just a reminder, public service announcement. You may not want to turn off Hockey Night in Canada once the Canucks and Bruins are over last night, as Jim Rutherford will be joining Scott Oak for After Hours tomorrow night. The other interesting part of what Elliot had to say, and we're going to rush through this because Yannick Hansen is going to join us on the other side, but what we've discussed here on the show, Vincent Desharnais, Canucks possibly looking at finding a change of scenery for him as it hasn't worked out through these first couple of months of the season. But also, yes, they're still looking for help on defense. Yes, they're also looking for help within the forward group. Elliot, essentially confirming what we've been talking about here on the show for the last little while. Seth.
Yeah, we talked about this earlier this week that for all the talk about defense and that they're going to wait to see what happens, if a deal comes up to defense now that they can do, they'll make the deal. These guys are aggressive. The rostered freeze is coming up next week, but I wouldn't put it past them.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's unlikely they make a deal by then, but I wouldn't put it past them to make a deal by then. And as much as we're talking about defense, I do think that forward is also in the discussion. And I brought up Heinen, how it hasn't quite worked. Now he scored a goal last night. It was big for him, right? And that's obviously something that helps his confidence. The coach even talked about how big that was for him to score that goal. But it hasn't worked the way they had hoped. And he's making 2.25. And like Elliot also mentioned, they're not afraid of moving guys out potentially to make some room here, right? So I think it's very clear this front office hasn't loved everything they've seen. And for as much as they like the forward group, they still want to make some improvements, because I like Lekkomäki a lot. I don't think you can expect him to play in your top six this year and be a difference maker right away, right? So if you're trying to improve your forward group, it probably has to be external, at least for the rest of the season.
Just tell me Frank Vatrano wouldn't look good on a line with Miller and Besser. Come on. Am I the only one who thinks that? I can't be the only one who thinks that.
We kind of need the Canucks not to trade for Italian guys.
One more Italian player.
Otherwise, especially like notable Italian
players.
Yes. Otherwise, we're getting reach all the time.
Man, I think it would be great. I think he's kind of the player you would hope to see. Good forechecker, good checker, good goal scorer.
Hits
all the boxes.
Yeah, and I think, you know, somebody's texting in and it's like, you know, this is the whole JT stuff. It's tedious, the same stuff. And honestly, the JT thing hasn't changed. Like,
no.
Everything we're saying today is stuff that we talked about the last little bit. Like, nothing's really changed. But nonetheless, he's like, break a trade rumor, please. I don't have anything specific. But, like, I think this front office, as much as they have to wait to the deadline and, you know, that's the best time as far as accruing more cap space.
Mm-hmm.
They're also at a spot where if something comes up, they might jump into it, you know, and I wouldn't be surprised if the first move they make is a forward and not a defenseman, for all the talk about, you know, them trying to add a defenseman.
For the Canucks Central Roundup today, the Canucks will take on the Boston Bruins tomorrow. Bruins having a tough time on their 5-game road trip so far, lost 8-1 to Winnipeg to start it, and then 5-1 to Seattle to begin their 5-game roadie. They will not be on a back-to-back or anything like that tomorrow night when they play the Vancouver Canucks. Also of note today, Patrick Alvin announcing that defenseman Mark Friedman and forwards Atu Ratu and Max Sasson have been assigned to Abbotsford, to which I actually ask, what is the salary cap? Don't read into this as if some trade is coming. This is simply the Canucks doing what they've been doing all year long, and that is papering guys down for salary cap reasons. And another big note, Sawyer Mignot is officially on Team Canada for the World Junior Championships, and a player that is garnering a lot of excitement in prospect circles and certainly within the Canucks organization is going to be in the spotlight come the WJC.
Yeah, and he can play with a little bit of nastiness to him as well. I'm really, really excited to see how he does in this tournament. And, you know, he has some skill, but it's really about his all-around game. And if that stands out, I know Canucks fans are going to get excited pretty quickly.
All right. Yannick Hansen going to join us here on Canucks Central. If you have a hockey player to buy for on your Christmas list, you need to check out the Hockey Shop in Langley. Their expert staff have been busy getting their stick racks ready for gift giving season. And they've got the best selection of Bauer sticks for you to put under the tree. Like Bauer's newest stick, that's the ultimate gift for any hockey player, the Bauer Twitch. At the top of every kid's wish list is the Bauer Mystery Mini Stick. And the Hockey Shop has them in stock now too. The Hockey Shop in Langley or online at thehockeyshop.com. Yannick Hansen next on Sportsnet 650.
The most opinionated Canucks show out there. Canucks Talk with Jamie Dodd and Thomas Drance. Be sure to subscribe on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.